Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. All right, so welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Bebe Lorenzetti, and to be honest with you guys, she is a good friend of mine. You know, we're currently working on a retreat together where we're going to Costa Rica, which that's happening in March and April. And we have been to Mysore a bunch of times, and she's a dear friend of mine. And honestly, like, she's one of the people that I check in with the most and just kind of like totally dig the vibes. She's from Italy and she's living in New York right now. And so I want to welcome Bebe to the show.
Thank you, Taylor. Hi, everybody.
You know, I don't know if a lot of my listeners know who you are. I know who you are, and I think a lot of the Ashtanga community knows who you are. And so let's just start with like some basic stuff so that they can know who Bebe is. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and where you came from?
All right. Well, as you said, I'm from Italy. I've been in New York for about 10 years. And let's see, I came to yoga when I first moved to New York. I lived in the Lower East Side and I was studying theater, and I was slightly addicted to exercise. And so I realized in one of my walks home, I saw this place called Yoga to the People, and it said donation base. So it was perfect because I was pretty broke. And I decided to go the next day and I fell in love with it. It was like movement with music and a teacher that had a really nice voice and read really nice quotes at the end of Shavasana, and they had a gong. So it was a whole like sensorial great experience. And I started going at least twice a day because I didn't really have much to do at the time.
Studying theater, I don't blame you. It's probably pretty stressful too.
Yeah, it was pretty stressful, and it was all about like figuring out characters and so figuring out how other people live. And it turned out that the more I practiced, the more I was like, I don't even know who I am. How can I ever even begin to figure out what another person is like? And so I kind of
But that's really good insight, though.
Yeah, it was a great, thank God for that, because that's what made me really curious about yoga and this whole process of moving inwards to really realize like who you are despite this outer, you know, thing that you dress up and that you feed, and that where is that all coming from? It made me really curious about just spending time with myself and spending time rekindling mainly the relationship to myself, because it wasn't a really peaceful relationship at the time. I was struggling with quite a few things, and so it was really like a sense of, even just a sense of being in the room was like coming home. And that's kind of the thing that throughout, it took me like 3 years to get to Ashtanga, but the sense of coming home to myself has been throughout all these 13 years of practice, the most stable feeling of just like, it's a place where that when I step on the mat, it's like I'm home. And when I teach,
wow,
yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And I think it's also like when I'm teaching, like that's the feeling when someone steps into the door, I want them to feel like this is your home. This is like your place where you can be safe and like deal with your own shit. You know, it's
yeah,
a safe
of course.
Space.
Well, but tell me like a little bit about like the backstory. I mean, why did you even come from Italy to New York? Like what inspired that?
A deep love for this teacher, John Strasberg. He's the son of the actor's studio founder, Lee Strasberg. And yeah. He came to give a workshop, and it was all about accidentally on purpose is his thing. And I really loved how he worked with like things in life happen for a very specific reason. But this was applied to theater. And so I just followed him to New York, and I came to New York and I fell in love with New York. And then I just, one thing led to the next, and I just stayed. And, you know, it's funny because things kept, like, it was just like everything kept moving, and everything that like I thought was like I had arrived where I needed to be, something would like fall and I would have to find a new place and like begin again. And then it was kind of like that until 2009 is when I was going back and forth between Spain and New York for that period, 2005 to 2009. And then 2009, I was like, okay, I got like a 200-hour certification for teaching vinyasa. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to move to New York and I'm going to teach yoga. And
wow.
Yeah. And at the time, actually, I was doing a hep C cure because long story short, I had a partner and I had a bad lifestyle and I ended up having hepatitis C. And thanks to yoga and Ayurveda, I was able to heal it in 3 months. Even the doctors were like, how did you do this? I was like, I don't know. I'm just practicing yoga every day and I'm drinking 1.2 liters of water every morning the first 20 minutes that I'm awake. And like, what? Yeah, and they were bewildered. They continued the treatment for a year, but the whole thing was that I made a pact with them that I could travel back to New York and teach yoga and take the meds with me without having to check in with them every month. Wow. And so I came and I started teaching, and you know, it was a very different kind of teaching from Ashtanga, but I feel like, you know, the sensation that I began cultivating then is still the same, which is, you know, we're here to heal, and it doesn't matter like where you come from or like necessarily what kind of, I mean, yes, the style of yoga does matter, obviously, but the beginning intention of like, I'm here to face myself is the most important thing,
right?
You know, and then I stayed.
Yeah. And so you were talking about like lifestyle and that you weren't living in a very good lifestyle. What do you actually mean? What do you even mean by that?
Let's just say I spent 3 years doing a lot of cocaine and drinking and going out.
So you were like a party girl?
I was, yes.
Like you were going around and you're going around to parties and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, I was.
And this was also right as soon as you moved to New York?
No, this is before. So I moved to New York. This was like the period of time between 2005 and 2008 where I was in between Ibiza, Spain, and New York. And I happened to have this boyfriend who was a very complex person, and drugs were a big part of his world. I was pretty lost at that time in my life. I had an eating disorder and I was just kind of like looking for, you know, a person that would just swipe me off my feet and take me into their world. And this is exactly what happened. And I did that until, thank God, you know, yoga came into my life in 2006 and it stayed through the partying years. I thought it was the one thing that like I would do every day, no matter what. And then, you know, the blessing was that in 2008, I was diagnosed with hep C, and then the yoga piece really took, like, I was like, this is it. I have to leave this partner and I have to do. So it was a combination of like, you know, the yoga stuck through, and then eventually the situation culminated so that I could just stick to the yoga piece.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And so why don't you talk a little bit about like, you know, like your first experience like teaching and stuff in New York. And so like what did that feel like?
It felt like, I mean, I just was so grateful. You know, for me at that point, yoga was really what kept my sanity and what brought me into, it wasn't until much later that I came into a place where I can say I was whole, but it was like the thing that kept me sane through all the crazy situations that I was in. And so it yeah. felt like this big, it felt like, it was the biggest gift that I had given myself to actually, you know, to step away from everything that had been and step into this new me. And so it was a very emotional experience, and it was really nice to feel like one with a lot of people and to feel like there were other people that were, you know, that I was there to hold space for other people. I think that's a really beautiful thing yeah. that we as teachers hold, you know, like we have this amazing blessing to hold space for others.
Yeah. And so do you think that by, you know, you teaching that you not only were helping other people, but helping yourself?
For sure. Then, oh my God. But to this day, you know.
How so?
Well, I think that whenever you take teaching, you know, I take teaching very seriously. It's my biggest responsibility. I mean, I don't have children, so I can say this somewhat easily. You know, teaching is to me my biggest responsibility and the thing that I have been the steadiest with in my whole life. It's now actually been a longer relationship. Yeah, I think it's been the longest relationship I've ever had. So I mean, practice is my longest relationship, but teaching is also a pretty long one. And I think that, you know, it makes you really responsible. So it really, you know, just like when you first come to the practice, you begin to change your lifestyle because you know that you have to show up the next day. I feel like with mm-hmm. teaching, there's this whole other set of lifestyle responsibilities that you kind of sign up to. Like, for me, it's been like really aware of the choices I make, like about the time that I go to bed and the things that I do during the day. Like, I'm very aware of not injuring myself, not just for me, because I have to show up and like lift people, you know, and like hold them. It's given me like, it's made me step out of my own little world and think of myself as like a broader thing, you know, like a broader vessel that's not just limited to me. And so I think that with that, especially coming from a background of like eating disorders, whenever you are anorexic or bulimic, or if you have any kind of disorder like that, it's, you get so stuck in your mind, like you can't think outside of your own self. It's always about like, oh, am I getting bigger, or am I, like, there's a lot of shame. And I think teaching really helped me in stepping outside of myself and being like, you know, this is, why are you here? Like, this is not just to, you're here for something that's greater and beyond yourself. And so that's been a huge lesson. You know, it's such a blessing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I experience the same thing with, you know, all the addiction stuff that I struggle with, but I mean, it does seem like a higher purpose to like teach and give this practice to other people and like see it, people succeed. And I mean, I feel like I'm useful in society today, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Where I didn't feel like that. And my life was a wreck. I mean, like, how was your life, you know, as, you know, dealing with, you know, anorexic, bulimic, or, you know, the eating disorder stuff that you were talking about? And, you know, I mean, was it a wreck during that period of time? Like, I mean, did you feel like you were totally out of sorts?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, you live in a very small, limited mindset, and all your energy is going towards, like, you're essentially controlling all your actions to belittle yourself and to keep yourself small. And your mind is literally your biggest enemy. And it takes so much energy to control yourself in a non-healthy way, you know, that then you have little energy mm-hmm. left to do good things, you know, and to even just be a good person, like to be a nice person to people that love you. So you're constantly feeling like you're under attack. And so it's really hard to, it's really hard to exist like that, you know, like you become your own worst enemy, really.
Yeah, I've experienced the same thing with addiction. I mean, it sounds like the exact same thing, actually.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it is an addiction at the end of the day. You know, it's like you're addicted to keeping yourself small and to not, you're basically like, if you think about it, like you were just saying, like you have a higher purpose when you're teaching, like basically what you're doing when you have an addiction, you're continuously preventing yourself to be who you really are meant to be. You know, so it's like, you're just constantly living in ignorance and preventing yourself from coming into a space of like wisdom and light. And so it's really sad if you think about it.
It is sad. I mean, and a lot of people struggle with it. And honestly, you know, some people use Ashtanga yoga to, you know, basically keep themselves like, you know, sick with that.
Yeah.
You know, with the disease, and it's unhealthy to a certain, it's definitely unhealthy to many points, but you know, it's like nowadays we can be so much bigger and we can be so much better and we can be healthy and all of those things. And more people need to choose those healthy decisions, I think, when it comes to stuff like
that. Totally. And I think, you know, from my own experience, it's, and from the students that I tend to attract as well, because obviously then, I don't know if it happens to you, but I get a lot of students that have the same kind of, maybe not the same addiction, but some kind of addictive behavior. I don't know if that happens to you as well, but it definitely, yeah.
Of course.
And I definitely feel like, you know, in my own journey, the seed of addiction, it took, and it's a constant process. Like, it's never going to end, but it took a long time to really be honest about it. Like, Ashtanga is such an easy thing to create an addiction to, like you're saying, that it was hard to burn through that seed of like, okay, this, I'm not going to turn this practice into an unhealthy addiction. You know, I'm going to, right. You know, I had to go through a phase where it was an addiction at first, and it was the way that, like, I was like, oh, I'm going to practice so then I can eat this or I can do this. It was like, for that was kind of like the first transition. And then the second, like, phase of that, yeah, was like, all right, well, I know that now I show up for myself. I can be a little, and there's like a rigidity in the practice that keeps me like in control. Then I can be a little bit less controlling in my like life off the mat. And then, like, once that settled, I feel like phase three was like, all right, I'm kind of trusting myself in both areas. So I'm just gonna really listen to what my body needs today. And within the structure of the practice, like, how can I help myself feel or like be more available to life and to the people around me, you know, like, versus it being like, I have to do this in a certain way or it's not, or it doesn't count. So like, I feel like over the 8 years of practice, like, I'm at a place now where there's enough softness that I can like really make the practice like a vehicle to really be of service, you know, to really be like in the world. And I think that's like an important, when people come in and I see like that fire that I maybe had a few years ago, I watch very closely without like judging or without necessarily making it like evident. But like, I think it's very important as teachers to like be aware of where a person is coming from to the practice, especially if they have some kind of background in addiction.
Addiction is such like it's such a powerful thing. And so just like totally, I don't know, grasping it is very hard. And it's taken me a long time to figure out all of that stuff and with my own personal practice and like what it meant to, like, you know, because I could get unhealthy with it as well.
Right. So, right.
You know, you got me a little intrigued. And so I'm interested to understand how you made the switch from Vinyasa to Ashtanga.
Yeah.
And like, and why you made it. So why'd you do that?
So let's see. I had a fallout with Yoga to the People and I needed to find a new yoga home. And at the time I was really interested in working with kids. And so I was kind of following Benton Learning, which I don't know if you've heard of. They like do kids yoga in schools, or they used to anyway. Okay. And they used to hold their sessions at the Shala Yoga House in New York City. And I went to one of their meetings and I was like, what is this space? This is so beautiful. They had like hardwood floors and like pink curtains. It was just like, it felt like I stepped out of time.
So different.
Yeah. And it was like, it had this picture of this man in his underwear and like, it was Guruji. And like, I was like, whoa, this is like the real deal. They had like divinities on their walls. I was like, oh my God, I need more of this. So I showed up the next day and I was like, hey, I'm a teacher. I want to teach here. And, you know, the owner is Barbara Roki, who's, Patabi Joyce's student, and Kristen Lay, they're the two owners. They were like, well, you know, usually we have people study under us and like practice for a little longer, and you know, maybe you could assist us. And I was like, all right, cool. And so I started assisting, and I was like, I couldn't afford it, so I was like cleaning the floors, doing the front desk, I did all of that, and I was assisting Vinyasa classes. And one day Kristen was like, you know, you're always here at the same time and you come every day. Why don't you come to Mysore? And I was like, what time is that? She's like, it starts at 7, because they were starting a little later at the time. And I was like, no, I was in a new relationship. And like, we would at night, even though I wasn't drinking or doing anything, like he would go out at night. And so I was like, no, it's not really my time. and she kept insisting. And then finally one day I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try it once. So I went once, and before I went, I like made sure I memorized the whole thing, and like I looked like I knew what I was doing when I walked in. And that day, I think it was like a Tuesday, and Barbara was teaching. This was 2010. And I show up, and I was in gymnast when I was little until I was like 10 or something. So I was like, I was pretty bendy. And I show up and I like do the whole thing, and I see Barbara watching me the whole time. And I get to this one pose. I think it was like, oh, I figured out how to do Supta Kurmasana so I wouldn't be stopped, because I figure like if she sees I can't do something, she'll stop me. But then when I got to Setu Bandhasana, I couldn't figure out from the book how to do it. So I was like trying to figure it out, and Barbara comes over. She's like, so traditionally we actually learn one pose at a time and we do just a little bit. And I was like, no, I got this. And she's like, well, it seems like you're struggling with this a little bit. She's like, why don't we stop here and we'll work on it later on. So I was so upset. I was like, oh, I really wanted to finish this. And so I like that. I like that something upset me and challenged me. So I was like, all right, I'm going to do this like 3 times a week. And then it just turned into every day. And I didn't know that there was anything beyond it, because at the time, I think like students at the Shala still weren't really doing second series. Like there was this one lady that was doing third, but I had no idea what she was doing. I thought she was just like a special person that could do whatever she wanted. So that one day my friend got this other pose, and I was like, whoa, why is she doing something else? This is so crazy. And then like I asked Kristen, I was like, why is she doing like a different pose from everybody else? And she's like, well, it's second series. And I was like, oh my God, there's like this whole other world. And so that's when I think this was maybe like 3 months into it. And that's when I was like, all right, I like this. There's more challenges. I'm going to continue doing this. And then shortly after I went to, well, I did, the Shala was doing their first teacher training at the time. So I did their teacher training. And then when they finished, that was like, we finished in December 2010. And then I got a ticket to go to Mysore in January 2011. And so I went there for the first time for, I think I went for 2.5 months. And I was so excited. And actually the first week, I was so excited. I got like 12 o'clock practice time. And I was like, this is bullshit. I'm not here to wake up at 12 o'clock. So I went to the Shala at like, I didn't know what time. I hadn't figured out what time people started practicing. So I figured, all right, well, maybe it's 7 a.m. like it is at the Shala. So I show up at 7 a.m. and I realized there's people there. So the next day I went a little earlier. And then by like the fourth day, Sharat comes up and he's like, what's your name? I was like, Bibi. He's like, why are you here? I was like, I don't know, I'm just watching. And he's like, what's your practice time? I'm like 12. And he's like, why are you here? I'm like, I'm just watching. He's like, go home, don't come back tomorrow. And so I was devastated. I was like, oh my God.
I mean, 12 o'clock, I remember I was there in 2011. That was my second trip, I believe. And it was so busy that
year. Oh my God.
That the practice times, like basically Sharat taught until like 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
It was nuts. Yeah.
It was nuts. Oh my God. Yeah. So I was so upset. I was like, he's sending me home. This is, it was like a heartbreak. I was like,
of course it was.
Oh man. And for a person that loves to, you know, I used to love getting, I mean, I still kind of do, but now I feel like the 30s is good for like not giving a shit anymore what people think. But I was like, I used to really care what people thought. And I was like, damn, I got the guru to send me home. This is such terrible news. and then the next day, or I waited one day, and then the day after I went, and Sharat actually gave me, he was like, you come on the stage, and the rest of the 2 months I had to practice next to him on that slippery stage with like the cold air coming down on one side. But it was really special, because then I feel like it was a good learning like step of just, you know, you show up for yourself and you don't make your own rules. Like you have to be humble, and you have to show up when you're told to, keep your odrishti and do your thing, and then go home and take rest. You know, like don't be bothered with what others are doing. This is like your practice.
I mean, I think a lot of people kind of get off of, you know, or get a little off track sometimes, especially in Mysore. I think it's very easy to kind of get off track and like focus on what other people are doing and not pay attention to all of the stuff that gets brought up by the practice. I mean, I think a lot of times the people, you know, kind of go towards like paying attention to others because, you know, their own bodies, their own minds, like the practice is bringing up all of those things and they don't want to see them. So they would rather look at someone else or break their drishti and look at some, you know, someone else and compare themselves to it or judge them or whatever.
Yeah. It's really easy to do that. And it's,
Super easy, yeah.
Yeah, and I think go ahead.
Well, I mean, tell me a little bit about, like, I mean, you know, you talk about your first experience with Mysore, but, I mean, when did you get authorized? Like, what trip did you get authorized on?
I got authorized in 2014, that October. So I had this thing where so 2011, I went for the first time, and then he came to Greenwich that same year, and I was supposed to start assisting Kristen, Barbara in the room. And I thought, since I had like a relationship with him now, and I had been to Mysore, and I knew that you have to be authorized before you start teaching, I thought I'd ask him if I could assist in my shala. And so I asked him, and he was like, yes, okay. So I started assisting, and then I went back to Mysore that October, and then, yeah, so 2011, I went twice. And then that year of 2014, even though I wasn't authorized, I asked him if I could assist that year when I arrived. And he was like, yeah. So I assisted him. And then at the end of the assisting month, he authorized me to teach primary and second series.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was a good moment.
Did it change everything for you?
Did it change anything for
me? Or was everything the same?
It felt good since I had been assisting. It felt good to know that I had my teacher's blessing to be and to then be on my own. Because when I went back, Kristen and Barbara offered me, like, I had a whole slot just for my, like a 2-hour slot just for myself. So it was really nice to have that. In like retrospective, I think that, you know, I was 26, 27 at the time. And I feel like I was still pretty young to the practice. And I think that, you know, watching people now assisting and watching new teachers, I feel like there is something really important about practicing for a long time before you teach, and to, especially for like injury stuff, because there's, you know, I had a lot of injuries. I was learning third series when I started teaching, and I was, I started to get really injured once I got past half of third, because I was, you know, like by myself in a room with 50 people every day. And then I was running to practice, and then I was running back to the shala and teaching the afternoon program and privates in between. And so there was a lot of like outwards energy and very little like yin energy happening. So I definitely, and I remember Eddie, who at the time, like he took me on as a student when I wasn't in Mysore, when I started doing third. And I remember him very clearly telling me like, let's finish third first and then you begin teaching, even if Sharat like authorized you, like you're in a really crucial moment of your own practice. And I was like, yeah. And I just went on and did my thing. And like, of course you have to pay bills, and I didn't want to teach vinyasa anymore. And like all those things obviously were like part of it. But now looking back, like I really value Eddie saying that, you know, like there is something really, and you, I don't know if you share this, but like there is something really precious about like hosting a very special time for your own practice, which sometimes you just can't when you're teaching a lot, you know, like it becomes like just like you keep it up, you know, and to continue to learn and teach is really hard. To continue it's to learn so hard, asana, not other philosophy is a little bit easier to continue to like be a student of that. But being an asana student when you begin to go into the more advanced practices is really hard when you're teaching full time.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally. Well, and so tell me a little bit about like what yoga means to you today.
What yoga means for me today. That's a really good question.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because like kind of what you're saying is that, you know, your relationship with it from vinyasa to ashtanga is, you know, obviously that's changed, and, you know, and taking care of yourself has changed. I mean, you've went through a massive amount of change just like from a bird's eye view. I mean, I get to hang out with you maybe like once or maybe twice a year. And, you know, like I see this continual change, but what is it? What's it feel like to be in BB's shoes?
Well, yeah, I definitely feel like there's been a lot of change. And I think that it's kind of the past year has been kind of like a feeling of, like, just like I said at the beginning, like for my first yoga class, it was like this feeling of coming home to myself. I feel like in this past year, it's my 33rd year has really been, my 32nd, 33rd year has really been like about that feeling, like really on the inside, you know, like without yoga studio, without practice. Like, I feel like the practice has finally like establish itself inside, and there's a sense of just like arrival. And I think that yoga is like, it is that arrival, it is that like it, and it's constant, you know, you don't just arrive and then that's it. It's like this constant daily arrival to this inner space, and like acknowledging that it's that you need a lot of compassion to yourself to arrive every day, and to be okay with like the arrival being whatever it is today, and that it's different every day, but that there is this continuous sense of like, I guess you know, whenever there's that sound where it's just kind of like, it's just like a very even boring sound. It's just that sense of just like, I'm here and this is okay. And like, there's maybe like a million thoughts that are coming, but like underneath those million things, you're like, oh, it's okay. Like, I've arrived. Like, it's totally fine. So to me, yoga is that. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's arriving, and it's being okay with arriving being different every day. And that like, we're in it together. And so when you practice, it's a sense of like unity that comes. That's like, I'm not alone in this. Like, I'm here. Like, there's this universal love that's holding me, and like, we're arriving together every day in our total imperfect shape.
Yeah. Well, that's beautiful. What about, you know, like, how do you, I mean, is that why you practice? Maybe that's a better question.
Yeah.
I mean, is that why you practice?
Yeah, I do. You know, I'm I think if there still is, like, I think that my addiction now is this sense of like being connected to, and it sounds really corny, but like, I will find myself whenever I can practice well, and that might mean like 10 minutes before teaching I sit in meditation and not practice until later after I teach, but like, there's this ability, like when you sit, you're reminded that like, it's like you, I don't know how to explain it, but it's been really growing inside me lately, where it's just like you look at a tree and you feel God, but not God like in the sense of like religious God, but like this just Mother Nature love God. And I feel that a lot lately, and I'm addicted to that feeling, and not addicted in like a bad way, but like I strive to see the world in this way, because when I can see the world in this way, I can have more compassion to people and to myself and to everything, you know, like, and the days that I can't do that, especially now that I'm working on this house and it's just so filthy and nasty and so much nasty stuff is coming out from it within myself, but like, I strive every day to like to feel that connection, you know, because I feel like it's a little easier than to find that sense of arrival that I was talking about before. Like if you can feel this union to like the divine or to like universal love and beauty and whatever, it's a little easier to like be in that equanimous state.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you say that, because one of the most profound experiences that I've had recently is that I felt like I, you know, I'm searching for that connection and that higher power and God and all those mm-hmm. things that you're talking about. But I got done with my practice and I remember like I was sitting there with just my eyes closed and just like soaking in every single thing that was going on mm-hmm. and like letting everything settle. And I, an image of Ganesh, a tiny Ganesh sitting at the base of my spine, like came to my head. And I was, it gave me goosebumps.
I just got goosebumps listening to you.
Yeah. And I was like, whoa, like where did that even come from? It was the most profound thing. And I was like, oh yeah, thank you. You know, and I like gave blessing and I was like, thank you so much for these kind of experiences, because I'm reminded of it over and over and over.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. That's what we do this for, you know, like to feel that.
Yeah.
I was listening to something, you know, I drive a lot lately and I do a lot of train time to get to New York and Westchester and everywhere else I teach. And, I've really delved into this podcast world, and I was listening to an Oprah podcast and she was like, the best prayer that you can do is thank you. And I love that, you know, like I love that just like the best thing that you can do is say thank you, you know, like because every yeah. day there's so many blessings, like whether they're negative or positive things that happen to you, I feel like there's always a blessing in it, you know. So it's,
yeah.
I love that you were like, yeah, I just said like, beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, it's like, thank you for everything.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about our retreat. So I'm looking forward to Costa Rica.
Yeah.
I mean, how about you?
Talk about feeling beauty and divine all around you.
Well, we got a retreat coming up March 29th through April 5th, and we're doing it together, which is like the first time that we've worked together.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
And we're going to like remote place of Costa Rica, which is, you know, really undeveloped, but there's all these beaches that are uninhabited. Like, you know, it's called Playa Blanca and Playa Negra and like all of these different beaches that have different color sand. And I just got back from there, and Bibi, you are going to absolutely love it.
Oh my
it.
God,
so
I can't
amazing,
wait to see it.
So.
I was also reading on the website that they're very like aware of the ecosystem and that they have this whole system to like recycle water and like reuse it for their eco village, which I'm really excited about because I've really been getting into like green energy and sustainable building and all these things. And I love that that's kind of their vision as well, of like they built a place that's just based on that.
The whole community, or maybe even you could say country, is like the cleanest thing I've ever been to.
Oh my God.
I mean, there's no trash on the road. Like everyone takes care of their plots. Everyone... I mean, it's just, it's really amazing. So I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it will be a great thing.
Yeah.
And one of the, maybe the most significant events that happened like on this last trip, and I'm sure we'll experience it when you're there with me in April or whatever, is that there was about 500 sea turtles.
Oh my God, like I saw you posted
turtles.
That.
They hatched while we were there, and it hatched at like 5 p.m. And like everyone, there's maybe 30 or 40 people at the beach. Everyone was just bawling their eyes
out
as these little guys were like trying to get into the ocean. And my kids were crying. Michaela's crying.
Oh.
And it was just like really, it was just like a beautiful life moment.
Wow.
You know? So it's
I've never
it's really
experienced
amazing,
that.
So.
I saw the video you posted and I was like, wow. There's life for you.
Yeah. So it's going to be a great event. I'm looking forward
Me
to doing
too.
It with you.
Me too. And so we're going to do practice in the morning with the both of us in the room. And then we'll do some afternoon workshops and we'll spend time exploring this magical place. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I feel like winter's like beginning here. Today we had like our first snow. And I feel like by March, I'm like, I am so done with this. I cannot wait to be out of here. I'm actually going to Mysore right before it. So I'm really excited to make the transition from, you know, the shala in Mysore into like teaching people at the retreat.
To relaxing.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that'll be great.
It'll be really good.
So, well, I want to thank you for being on the show, and I want to thank you for kind of sharing your philosophy and like why you practice and all of that stuff. It's honestly, it's a pleasure to have you on here, and it's a, you know, like it's been amazing to see like you continue to grow and like share your message And, you know, thank you for being such a wonderful friend to me and my family and stuff like that. We're grateful to have you in our lives.
Thank you, Taylor. I am so grateful to have you and your family in my life. And I'm so happy that we made this happen finally. It's really yep. been a pleasure.
Well, thank you again. And I'll see you in at the end of March and the beginning of April.
Yes, I can't wait.
All right. Thanks,
BB. All right. Bye, Taylor. Thank you.
Hey, guys. Thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit ashtangayogacolumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is taylorhuntyoga.com. See you guys next time.